You think about your own kids and how you would encourage them to structure their day and take care of their bodies and make time for play and rest, the way that you would want your kids to live their lives in the pattern. I think God has a very similar heart for all of us in our work lives. And and we are the ones who are like, no, I'm going to do more with the talents you've given me. And he's like, don't kill yourself.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Julie K. Rhodes. The extra K is for, I honestly don't know, maybe she'll reveal it later on in the episode, but I'm partial to the letter. She is a Texas-based actor and author, so she's a double threat. Her book, Chronic Grace, Prayers, Saints, and Thorns That Stay, which was published in 2023, is a spiritual memoir tackling the bewildering new normal of chronic illness. You can catch Julie on the next season of Amazon Prime's / Redeem TV's Vindication. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, you did such a wonderful job presenting your book and the concepts, and it was particularly timely for me at our C-Suite for Christ group that let's dig more into it, and I'm excited to chat. Plus, I don't know that many actor authors, so now I feel like I could say, like, do you know Julie? Oh, you don't? Well, you're just not in the know. I want to start waving that around.
I mean, I don't know how far that's really going to get you, but great.
Maybe I could get a free Celsius or something somewhere. Well, tell me, Julie, what is on your mind?
Well, honestly, what's been preoccupying my life the past week has been the passing of my grandmother. But all of the questions that raises for us when we say goodbye to someone we love, especially someone who has lived such an iconic life that we aspire to and want to emulate. And I have just spent a lot of time this week in my memory and in her house and with my family, rehashing the years, the traditions, the patterns that she instilled, and the person that she was, and then celebrating that, of course, at the funeral, and then separately, like around the dinner table with our family. And so it has been one of those really sacred pauses in life where you kind of take yourself out of the river, the flow of schedule and obligations and things, and you kind of just look at the river as a whole and watch it go. And ask yourself, where am I in this? And am I living along that path that she did? Am I going to have this sort of home cooking someday?
Yeah.
So it has not been morbid at all. It has been so profoundly precious and sweet and reflective. And, it's just making me think a lot about what it means to have a quote unquote successful life. And what that looks like, or it needs to look like. My life is going in a thousand different directions right now. I have two teenagers at home. Like you said, I'm an actor, I'm an author, writer. So I'm doing these two like impossible careers at the same time for some reason. I don't know. Just thought it'd be fun, I guess.
Overachiever. And
I guess, you know, what are the measures of success in those silos of my life, and do they add up to a composite success looking back? And so this is what I'm thinking about right now and pondering, and thinking about the things that were said at her funeral. None of them had to do with metrics of success that I tend to use with my own life.
Interesting.
She did not have a high-powered career. She was a homemaker and an active part of her community and her church. And everything that people were saying about her was her countenance, her openness, the peace with which she interacted with people. I remember the way I felt her her anticipatory delight in me. I went to her house knowing she expected to be delighted by me. It was like this really proactive way of loving people, is she expected the best and looked for the best and found the best. And it elevated all of us to live the best version of ourselves when we were around her. So she really exemplified unconditional love. And the person she was as a whole is what I would call successful. And I don't often apply that to who I am and what I'm trying to do every day when I set the alarm and hit my to-do list.
Yeah.
And set my goal, right?
Right.
And like measure my auditions and my bookings and how many books I've sold and how many hits I've got in my whatever. Like I have all of these silos and none of that is adding up to what I think at the end of my life, I'm going to like look back and say, well, I feel really good about that.
Right.
Maybe.
That's, man, there's a lot there. There's a lot I want to tease out. So, Lord help my memory, but this is for reasons maybe we can discuss after the interview, that this is a somewhat timely conversation, but you hear this sort of thing from certain like leadership thought leaders, which feels redundant, repetitive, and I immediately felt stupid saying that phrase, but at the end of your life, you know, what are you going to be remembered for? And, write your obituary and then, you know, live backwards from that. And what would 85-year-old you say about this, or think 10 years? There's all these exercises. And I do know that there are some people who live them, or they may espouse them. But I loved the picture you painted about, well, this really sort of pulled me out of the flow of life. And I had to look at the river as a whole instead of just the section I'm swimming in. Right.
Right.
And if you're a high achiever, which, you know, our listeners are, that's who this is aimed at. I would consider myself that, we were joking about being an overachiever, but you tend to like, this is the goal. This is the thing. I am here. And when I get this done, I'll move on to the next thing, because it just feels like step on step. And I think the trick is it sort of works, or at least gives the illusion that it's working for us. But what I hear you saying is maybe all of the bluster of activity, the achievements, the things, they're good and you should be proud of them, right? And other people should delight in those things. But it sounds like maybe there's a different filter by which you are passing the achievements, the goal setting, the activity, the progress that you're making as a professional, as an achiever, as a leader, that's maybe causing you to say, well, maybe this isn't as important or valuable as I once thought. And maybe how do you think this will stick? Because obviously it's fresh, but does this sort of, hey, this is a great moment, a gift from God, so to speak, to reflect and reconsider some things. But I think we waste these moments too often. And I'm curious what you've thought about, how does this stick with me and change me for the better?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm not called to be my grandmother. We have very different giftings and very different opportunities and education. And I have a very different personality, and I'm not called for my life to look like hers. So I think it's up to each of us to acknowledge humbly the gifts we've been given and the privileges we have. And I think, to your point, there is nothing wrong with progressing in a trajectory that you have set out for yourself. You know, we hear a lot about the talents that were given to the people in the parable, and this person got this number of talents, this person got a little bit more, this person got a much more. And that parable is often, I think, misappropriated to say, well, this means that if I've been given, for instance, the gift of education, that I need to achieve a higher level of success than maybe my parents did. Mm. Or if I'd been given a certain amount of finances, then I need to end my life with a higher balance sheet than I started with. We sort of, I think, rightly want to do right by, we feel the weight of privilege and responsibility. And I think there is a place to very responsibly steward that in our lives. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the motivation. And I think a lot of the times for me, the motivation is ego and it notches in my belt. And success is just another proof to me that I'm a valuable human being instead of my relationship with God, the unconditional love I know I have from God. I tend to need to earn all of that. And I think what comes then is this frenetic spinning on the hamster wheel. And so while the outward result might be the same, we might have similar outcomes, we're not going to end up as similar people at the end of our life. Right. I think some of us will end up, and I'm in danger of this, burnt out, exhausted, bitter, disillusioned with life. And I think some of us who are operating from a core of unconditional love have the opportunity to end up filled with gratitude and a sense of peace that we have given our best and have perhaps lived up to some of those expectations, or maybe not, but that's not the most important thing about us. The most important thing about us is that we are unconditionally loved and that we have shown unconditional love in whatever area of leadership, business, family, nonprofit, ministry we have been given.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I'm curious, being that you've been an actor for some time and now an author, you know, you're getting to interact with people and run in circles where people are that they have achieved a lot. They've worked hard. They've gotten to a particular place. I mean, to get to be on a show that's going to be out on a major thing, like that's no small feat, right? So you're surrounded by great talent. And I do love the parable of the talents, like don't waste it. But in misappropriating that and saying, well, you've got to finish here. You've got to do this. If this is, you know, to whom much is given, much is expected, something from, like that from Spider-Man. So
exactly.
What you were talking about, the fact that you could be in danger of, you know, moving so frenetically, so powerfully, like you've got this momentum, you've got this energy, this drive in you, this motivation, which I love getting into motivation. Yeah. I'm an Enneagram, you know, fan, and I use it in my practice. And so I love, you know, distinguishing motivations from behaviors. But has it been your experience that people who say are high achievers, leaders, that they're probably more in danger of that burnout, that I'm not living from a place of unconditional love, I'm out earning it, than maybe those who don't have that internal engine? Not meaning to disparage anybody else, but you can kind of tell people who have high drive and people who don't. So can you talk to the person with the high drive that maybe says, I do feel so driven, I acknowledge that maybe I am on the brink or I'm headed for a burnout, I want to believe that I'm unconditionally loved, but life has not taught me that that is true, and I struggle to accept it. What do you say to that person?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, fostering a sense of the eternal and of unconditional love is a practice. It is not something that comes naturally. And especially for instance, Enneagram 3, which maybe a lot of your listeners are, who are enslaved to to-do lists, like I am, and to quarterly goals, we have a very natural knee-jerk reaction of, who am I? What am I worth if I am not hitting these marks?
Right.
And I think the first step is to acknowledge that propensity in us. And then we also have propensities to discipline, to the to-do list, to our very structured routines. And we should just acknowledge those are disciplines and habits that come very naturally to us, but there are disciplines and habits that don't, that we need to perhaps foster more intentionally. Because I think human nature can tend toward inwardly focused energies. We are just naturally inwardly focused on ourselves, on our environment, on our immediate needs. And I think to break out of that requires some intentionality. But the good news is, for high achievers, we're good at like new goals and setting new disciplines. And I think don't resist that in your personality. If that's part of your personality, apply that to more beneficial spiritual practices, for instance. I get more into this in my book. But there are prayer practices and very practical disciplines going back hundreds of years that we in modern day, frankly, just don't know about. Mm-hmm. And I think our churches have not been great about educating us in some of these ways. But there are very easily accessible routines that we can get into to access our belovedness in God through Christ. In ways that since getting well and coming back into full health and being able to work again, I have come to rely on in like more irreplaceable ways in my schedule. So, and we can get into what those are. But, you know, it doesn't, I think that often a lightning bolt will hit us and we will feel the presence of God, or we will, you know, get these moments of inspiration. Oftentimes suffering instigates these things. Sometimes we can't access, it's ironic, I think that sometimes we can't access the belovedness we have in God without suffering. That's a very uncomfortable dynamic that I wish was not true, but I believe is true, and it's proven itself true over history. And so I think difficulty in life will provide some of us an opportunity for that. I think discipline of a spiritual nature can help us access those things. So there's hope for us. There's hope for us overachievers.
There's hope. There we go. Maybe we just found the title of the episode, Hope for Overachievers.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Overachievers.
Yeah. Chronic grace for chronic overachievers. That'll be
chronic Celsius drinkers.
Yeah. There you go.
Chronic caffeine addict.
I feel like we're dangerously close to spinning off a separate podcast, which
Don't
would
tempt
be fun.
Me.
Between the two of us, I mean, you're a three, I'm an eight. We got enough force and power here to make it happen.
That's right. It's done. It already happened.
We're 12 episodes in now.
It's in the past. That's right.
I would love for you to share a bit about what you discovered, and you don't have to, you know, share everything within in your story, right? Like, that's why you go read the book. But the ways in which you developed practices, and then what has helped you keep them? Like you mentioned, depending on them, because I'll just speak for myself. I will go through a crisis or suffering or something like that and go, oh my gosh, all right, I got to pivot to make it through this crisis this period of time. And then things get better. And then I sort of like, okay, well, that seems less necessary now. So I will gradually let it just go by the wayside. What has helped you?
Yeah.
How do you know what practices to adopt? Because I think in particular for high achievers, crisis, things like that can be really disorienting because they're used to winning or getting their way or pushing something through. So how do you know what to adopt? And then how do you keep it so that it's almost like preventative care for the soul.
That's good. You know, eclectus is not the time to begin any sort of spiritual practice. I will say, unfortunately, that's usually, like you said, what we fall into. It's like, well, I got to pull out the big guns. Where are they? And it's all, you know, and then you feel extra shame because you're unable then to establish any kind of like, and it's hard to connect with God, frankly, when you're suffering like acutely. It's really hard to get all contemplative. And so that is not the time to start a prayer practice. Before I got sick, I was a frequent journaler of prayers. I had like pretty regular times of journaling, and that's just something that helped me. So I will say that Teresa of Avila, who is one of the saints in my book, talks about doing what works for you in so many words. And she says that whatever the crisis is, you must remember that you are ill, quote unquote. So don't try to force something into your life that does not make sense for your personality, for your schedule at first. Although I will argue that spiritual connection to God should be the priority of all of our lives. And I think as we grow, we find ourselves craving more and more of it, and we'll be able, I think, to do more of those things. But what is your style? Like, is it better for you to take a walk? Is it better for you to sit in silence? I think community is always a discipline that we all need, no matter what our personality types are. But there are individual practices that I think we should pay attention to what helps us the most. If praying aloud is the thing that helps, great. If using someone else's prayer is the thing, great. it's when we are feeling our oats and our energy and our strength and power, and we are checking off things and taking names, we don't feel like we need God. We don't feel like we need anything. But the great gift of suffering is to remind us that we are not in charge, and our worth is not dependent on what we're accomplishing. It is a great gift. And now that I am feeling well, I do feel the temptation to like, oh, I'm not going to do my prayer time today. I'm just going to blur in, you know, just do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. I just sense the priority shifting very, very quickly, even though I have supposedly learned this lesson, like wrote a book about it. So I honestly, right, freaks me out how I do sense the drift. And how I'm like, gosh, it's a good thing I have a habit of X, Y, and Z, because if I didn't, I wouldn't feel the need. So, we're squirrely human beings. And I think acknowledging like we have this weakness of pride, which naturally wants to wrest control away and take it back constantly. And I think there is a huge connection, by the way, between anxiety and humility. When I am feeling super anxious about a goal or whatever, career, kid, thing, I'm starting to learn to stop and go, gosh, how much do I think of myself that I just know how this is supposed to go? And I know what needs to happen to correct the situation. When did I become all-knowing here? And I think when I have been able to step back and release it to God, in a posture of, I'm not in control. I might have all of these plans and goals and have achieved whatever, but this is a gift of grace that has been given to me. So once again, I give it back. Peace frequently comes. That's a really roundabout way to answer your question. I just want to say that because I think it's connected to the spiritual practices we know we need. Yeah. And we need humility more than we need success.
Wow. All right. Everybody hit rewind on that one, because that'll probably just we'll clip it out and you'll just put it on repeat. because that's probably something I need to listen to 20, 30 times before it sticks in my thick skull. This is, you know, people say that they'll develop podcasts and get like free therapy, counseling, or help or whatever. That's a little bit of what I'm doing now, because like I said, it's really, really timely. The concept and the linkage between anxiety and humility is not one I've ever heard before, but something that as I reflect back, if I've ever made those shifts or experienced those shifts, that I could say, oh yeah, when I was anxious is trying to hold on to control. And unfortunately, as an Enneagram 8, I'm obsessed with control. There's strengths and weaknesses to every personality type. Mine just lets me trip over my own feet far too often, it seems. But,
well, and I would say, I think there's a, you know, a God-given agency that your personality has and an Enneagram 3 has. And
right.
I think God has given us a, you know, domain. And we are called to lead and to create change. And so these are good impulses. But in our natural state, we are just bent more and more toward.
There's
more
a ditch
control,
we can fall in
more,
with it.
Yeah, so fast.
Well, there's another podcast I should call it Life from the Ditch, a right. Tale of Extremes. So I'm thinking of the leader who, you know, senior leaders tend to their reward for being good at their job is more responsibility. And sometimes that's good until it isn't.
Mm.
Right. Like, because they're making up for other people's work and everything else. And that sort of burden can start to come with a certain amount of anxiety, given that shift of between humility and anxiety. It, as someone who, you know, obviously, like you've got high pressure, like you've got a book out there and you want it to do well, but within acting, you know, you want to get the scene right. You know, you don't want to be, I don't imagine anybody ever wants to be the actor in the scene that causes everybody to run it like 14 more times than it was necessary. So.
Yep. Nope.
You just had flashbacks.
Woo. Yeah. That's a nightmare.
How do you hold that then in tension with, well, I've got big responsibilities. There is a spotlight, real or, you know, metaphorically, on me to do well, to do right by others. I'm, you know, if you're a business owner, you've got payroll to make, right? Like I've talked to people and I empathize with them. You wake up at 3 a.m. sweating with a panic attack because you're not sure if, you know, all the checks are going to clear for the next payroll, things like that. How do you find balancing the anxiety or the stress, the pressure with humility, right? Like agency, humility, like it's all muddled up in there without falling into the ditch on either side?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a complicated answer. I don't do it successfully a whole bunch of the time. One practice that has helped me over the past couple of years is Sabbath. You know, taking a day of the week where I do not strive. Then this feels really, really risky sometimes because maybe I have an audition on whatever Monday, or it doesn't have to be Sunday. I'm just saying pick a day. I've picked a day and it's scary to A, not work out that day. I'm always trying to stay the same size. I'm a middle-aged woman. I'm trying to keep my appearance for the camera. I'm not going to try not to check my email. I'm going to try not to do XYZ for the book. I'm going to try. And I'm telling you, it can be a revolutionary, really kind of scary thing to take a day and just say, the world does not depend upon me. Not even my career depends upon me. And my product is me. I mean,
right.
Julie K. Rhodes is my offering, you know, like I'm the marketing department and the product and the CEO of these two things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, so taking a day to step back and be like, even though it is me that I'm trying to put out into the world, it's not about me and it's not because of me. And so I have found a lot of, it's very subversive and feels super rebellious sometimes. Be like, I'm not checking my Gmail. I am going to take a nap. I am going to take a walk and be a little old lady and make tea and read a book with my daughter and go to church. And there's a psalm that I love. Gosh, what is it? I quote it in my book. I should know. But it's the psalm where he's saying, I am like a weaned child with its mother. Quiet. And he's talking about, I'm with God like a weaned child. I don't need anything from you. I just want to be with you. And I know that you are going to supply all my needs. And so taking a day to reorient myself to that posture and that true identity is just a very practical way. I have tried to stem the tide, you know, that constant wheel of anxious thoughts and frenetic activity. It's like a break, hard break. And I would also suggest, I mean, another is to introduce little mini Sabbaths into every single day somehow. Whether it's like a prayer walk at lunch, I will often walk and I listen to this great podcast that is just scripture meditation. You know, it is very,
I thought it was going to be How Leaders Think. And I was like, yo, thank you so much. No,
yours is next after that. And,
yes.
You know, yeah. So you meditate on scripture. I would say find subversive time wasting things, quote unquote, that, that allow you to, gosh, we're so enslaved. And we don't need to live enslaved to our agendas and to our identities. And that's super hard. I mean, we eat what we kill, right? A lot of us who are entrepreneurs.
Amen.
I've never thought of myself as an entrepreneur, but I am, unfortunately. I'm an artist who's trying to like make money, which is impossible. And so it's too big for me. It's too big for me to carry. I was listening to another podcast this week, and it was a theologian saying, you know, we were created as creatures who are dependent on a creator. We were never meant to steward our lives and steward our work alone. That is just so antithetical to our design. And yet so many of us are just depending on our education and our smarts and our talent and our Rolodex and our whatever, whatever, whatever. That is so completely exhausting. I mean, I would love to be able to fall back on my resume and my training and my talent and whatever else, but every day is so unpredictable. And I have some measure of control. I can be prepared. I can be trained. I can show up every day consistently. All of that might come to naught, right? It just might. And so to realize our limits in a regular, ongoing way, I think is super helpful, even though it's super scary.
Yeah. What's funny is literally 3-ish hours ago was telling my lead pastor that, you know, I've been thinking, it's like, I need to put better boundaries around my work schedule. I said, but it terrifies me to think about working less. And I said, I'm not saying that like, oh, Kenny's just trying to be funny and use a hyperbole and blah, blah, blah. Like, I was like, no. Literal, like physical experience of fear, terror, anxiety that if I work less, and by work less, I mean like closer to 40 hours. Like if I were to put that kind of boundary, my thought is, well, immediately my family is homeless and we are starving. We're on the street. People are dying. the way I experienced it, you would think that that's what somebody told me. Hey, if you don't work 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and even when you're not at work, you're thinking about work. When you're with your kids, you're thinking about your meeting tomorrow and what you're going to say and what you're going to wear and what you need to do and how you need to prep and all these things that you're like, well, if I got to get it all right, because if I don't get it all right, it's all going to go wrong.
Yeah.
And the words of a newer friend of mine, y'all would probably get along really well. Ashley Smalley, she has a consulting business around HR, people ops in the DFW area. Free shout out. Actually, I'll invoice her later. But but she shared something with me that she was suffering from the same thing. And in a time of prayer and meditation, she felt like the Lord told her, you can do everything right and it'll still go wrong. And you can do everything wrong and it'll still end up right because of my influence, not because of yours. If it's something good for you and the bigger picture, which we obviously can't see, then he's like, just trust. Like, sometimes it's going to seem like nothing went right, even though you did all the right things, and vice versa. And she said that, and I tell her, it's like, your voice, it haunts me. So thank you for that. And it gets, which again, what you were sharing reminded me of her advice to me, because we were talking about similar things, which I think most high level leaders, entrepreneurs are struggling with that. Because we kill, if it's meant to be, it's up to me. And that's so easy to buy into, because there's so much out there in media reinforcing that. Yes. Right?
Yes. And we have so little imagination. We see it going only one way. Well, I put in, you know, this number of hours and I do this, which gets me to here, which gets me to this next place. And this is how this all, we have so little imagination for God's intervention for the actions of other people. I mean, when I got sick, I was a stage actor primarily, and COVID hit. I get long COVID. I'm unable to even crawl up the stairs to my kids' bedroom to kiss them goodnight. Like, forget acting anymore. I thought. And for a year and a half, like, didn't. And I had done everything right. I mean, I was very diligently auditioning and training and getting out there and staying current and keeping physically healthy. I was a jogger. I ran 4 times a week. I mean, I was on top of my game. And then all of a sudden, I am bedbound for months. Nobody could figure it out. And who could have seen that coming? But what a gift. Because of that, it led me to do more camera work after I got well. And now I'm on this totally other trajectory. There's a whole other story with how I feel God brought acting back into my life when I had totally discounted it and written it off, and because I thought it was too hard. And so I have seen the providence of the Lord in my life enough to know that if it's meant to be, he will bring it to fruition. And I just need to stay the course and be faithful, but killing myself and whipping myself and driving myself is not his best for me. And is not the loving way that I believe God, our Father, wants to lead us as his children through our work life.
Yeah.
You think about your own kids and how you would encourage them to structure their day and take care of their bodies and make time for play and rest. The way that you would want your kids to live their lives in the pattern. I think God has a very similar heart for all of us in our work lives. And and we are the ones who are like, no, I'm going to do more with the talents you've given me. And he's like, don't kill yourself. I mean, I think we're going way beyond what we were ever called to do. And I think it comes from, well, for me, pride and an insecurity in being enough. I just don't think I'm enough unless I've met some goal I have set out that I believe needs to happen.
Yeah.
So being open to the goals he might have for us is a challenge and requires like discernment and a willingness to slow down and listen.
Yeah.
And to wait. So much of my life as an artist is waiting and being patient and just sitting in silence. You know, it's a lot of just being ready. And I can't tell you how hard that is.
I can only imagine in your situation. I have my own, and I'm sure listeners have their own, like, you know, it's hurry up and wait. And waiting feels like laziness. which to yeah. a high achiever is probably the worst thing you could say to any of us, is that you're lazy.
Yeah.
I tell people there are swear words I would rather you call me that would bother me so much less than if you were to call me lazy. But when I'm waiting, when I'm quiet, if I actually do engage in Sabbath, then and really, really rest, then it can, because you're so wound up and you've programmed yourself to, like, I've got to do everything with every second that I can, that it can feel like laziness, which just comes back to, you know, condemnation or guilt and shame and things like that, that really aren't helpful. And no one's saying that about you except for you.
Yeah. Well, right? You know, God rested from his work in Genesis. If God takes a day, and it's not that he was tired, it's not that he was tired or exhausted.
He just set the pattern.
Well, but I think also he was just calling it good and enjoying this thing he had made. And I think us overachievers don't do that. We don't sit back and just enjoy the thing we have. Look how far we have come. Like, how often do we celebrate our achievements or where we are in life? If you look back 20 years, your 20-year-old self looking at your 40-year-old self, like, wouldn't you be proud of yourself? But we don't do that. We don't take time to sit back, stop working, stop spinning the wheels, and just appreciate and call it good. And we are entitled to more than that. I think we have been given the privilege of satisfaction in our work if we will just stop and take it.
Yes, and amen. Julie, if somebody is listening to this and they heard, you know, the different descriptions and things like that, and go, that's me. I'm working my face off. I'm not stopping to enjoy things. Maybe they're not at a place where there's a major life event, such as the passing of a loved one or something else that can sort of force reflection in the moment, but they say, I'd like to choose reflection before it's, you know, I'm forced into it.
Yeah.
What is that first step, that dip in the toe in the water, that someone can take in the next 24 hours that would cost little to no money?
Yeah. I would take an hour tomorrow. Find an hour, you know, maybe it's before work or at lunch, and take a walk in silence. And I would use the first half of that hour to practice the presence of God, as Brother Lawrence said. Now, I don't know what that needs to look like for you. For me, sometimes it's walking in nature and being thankful for everything I am passing, for being aware of the beauty or of the people or of the air or of the weather, really trying to ground down in the present moment in gratitude. I think is a great first step to connecting to God. I would recommend my friend's podcast, So Much More is what it's called. And it's scripture reading meditation.
Yeah.
She reads a passage of scripture. There's very, very nice music underneath it. And it's just like 20 minutes of it repeats about four times, and she will offer some commentary. But I will often walk and do that podcast. And that is amazing to me, what the Spirit will bring to mind, what truth will be impressed on my heart, or what, like, shift in direction I need to take. I think we know that God is talking to us when it's a freeing word of love, and it's not a shame or a, you know, piling on of anxious thoughts. That is not the presence of God, and that's not the voice of God. And so when we can connect to God in those ways and feel ourselves totally loved and accepted in him through Christ, then I think we can evaluate the areas in our lives where we are operating from a place of ego and not from love. And I would spend the next 30 minutes of that walk reflecting on these areas of our lives in which we are leaders, or gosh, whatever God brings to mind that we're just holding on to so tightly, And I find that just resets my whole perspective on my work and the goals I'm setting. And it just makes me feel okay. Like, I don't have to achieve one more thing in this life. I laid down and didn't lift another finger for the next 40 years. I would be as valuable and as beloved to him as I am when I am booking a role or writing an essay or making a dollar. That is so hard to believe if I have not experienced his presence directly. And so start with an hour. That might sound like a lot, but you might want hours and you might not be able to get enough. So try it out, right? And then, you know, with God's help, find a pattern that works for you that is sustainable. And there's not a prescription, I don't think, but there's a great book out now, John Mark Comer, Practicing the Way, that I would recommend about discipleship, which is a big word for following Jesus. And there's a lot of practical tools there. So I'd connect to a community and read a resource like that, listen to a podcast like that. Mm-hmm. And I would not put a bunch of pressure on yourself to grow right away. It is such a slow process sometimes, spiritual growth, just like anything else. So all we can do is, and we only have today. So focusing on this perfect, terrible day, as Kate Buller says, what is that verse that says today is the day of redemption? Like, don't put it off.
Yeah.
Today is the day of salvation, I think is what it says. Mm-hmm. But start with an hour and go from there.
I love that. Yeah, and we'll link to your friend's podcast and John Mark's book. I love one of his books, the Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And I read that with a guys group last year, and I was doing all of our books on Audible, and I said, hey, asking for a friend, is it against the rules to listen to this book at 1.7 speed? So I was trying to rush through that one, but it's a really good book. Thank you so much.
Sabbath in that.
He does. I need more of it. If somebody wanted to know more about you, your work, the book Chronic Grace, where would you point?
Go to Julie K, just the letter K, Rhodes.com. It's all there. I'm at Julie K Rhodes, Facebook, Instagram, X. Is that all my handles? Oh, LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. Yes. And we'll make sure to have all that linked up in the show notes as well, in case you're like, I don't know all about that. I just give me the blue link and I'll go there. Well, thank you so much for being a guest. Look forward to cheering you on and seeing more of your work come out. I think it's necessary and good and something that needs more talking about, if I'm being honest. So I hope that you'll come back in the future, and congrats on Vindication as well. So everybody go stream Maker famous for all the right reasons.
Maybe it would not be good for me.
leave her reviews. Like, I like Julie. She has a powerful yet humble performance. We'll leave that on Amazon. But for any of you, if you got value out of this episode, if you get value out of any of these episodes, please help others find it and get value from it. Help them get help. Pay it forward by liking, subscribing, rating, reviewing, any of those things. I would be grateful, and I'm sure somebody who's going to stumble upon this, if it's the right moment, the right time for them and their leadership journey, they'll appreciate it as well. But until next time, change the way you think, and change the way you lead. We'll see you.